I want to tell you about something I've used and I truly believe in. Replayer. It's a sideline camera built for youth sports. Just set it up, hit record, and it captures the entire game automatically. No chasing the ball, no holding your phone, just hands-free, stress-free recording. The in-game tagging is one of my favorite features. One tap, and you can mark a big goal, ankle-breaking moves, or a clutch tackle. Then pull those clips for later for review, highlights, or social media. And the live streaming's next level. A buddy of mine actually watched his son's game while flying cross country at 30,000 feet. That blew me away. If you're a parent or coach at the field every weekend, Replayer is a game changer. Head to replayer.com. That's Replayer.com. And I think you'll be amazed. Hey, soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of Team Player's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give Team Player a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I interviewed Buford from Soccer Parent Lifestyle. He is the owner of the Facebook page. He's also an author. He's a blogger and trying to make the splash into podcasting here in the near future. This week, we talked very high level parenting and soccer and all that fun stuff that comes along with it. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
My name is Buford Mobley. I am a soccer dad. Have a son that played for 15 years. He's now a sophomore in college and decided not to play in college. But just nothing special, just a working stiff, as they say, that had a son that played in college and had no idea how to help him. So that's how I became into the soccer business. I'm the founder of the Soccer Parent Lifestyle. It's a media company that focuses on all things youth soccer. We publish a digital magazine, and I've authored a couple of books. We're starting a podcast, so we're really just getting into the media areas focusing on youth soccer, and that's pretty simple. My bio in a nutshell.
That's awesome. So the world of media, social media, that's where I found you, was via your Facebook group. And there's a lot of questions, and it's very well moderated compared to a lot of soccer groups and questions and helping, trying to help people. So was that your original intent, was just to go find help and then you started the group, or did you kind of start the group hoping people would help you?
Well, I started out writing a blog. When my son started playing, he started playing soccer at 4 or 5. I never played soccer growing up. Matter of fact, the first soccer game I ever went to was in college at Clemson University. I'd never met a soccer player until I got to college. But when my son started playing, the first few years, you know, it was just playing in the rec league. And turned out he was pretty good. So we went, joined a club, and I quickly found out that I didn't know anything about soccer and how to help him. And none of the other parents did either. And he went to his first big tournament, and I guess he was maybe 10, 11 at this age. And I went over to another field to watch a game, and it was, you know, the same age group as my son. And I looked, and they were playing a totally different game than my son was playing. At the time, my son was the fast kid that everybody booed the ball, and he chased the ball and go and score. And that, of course, it was great to me because, you know, my son was scoring 4 or 5 goals a game. I thought all was right with the world. And then I went over and looked at some kids that were playing soccer, and I realized that there was a whole nother level to this soccer thing, and I wanted to find out how my son playing on that level. And I went to the club, I went to the coach, and didn't really get any satisfactory answers, and none of the parents knew. So I just took it upon myself to find out everything I could about youth soccer, and just really an attempt to help my son become knowledgeable about the game so that I could, you know, at least point him to a proper trainer or something to help him. And so once I did that, I started writing a blog, and it got a little traction. And about that time, Facebook groups came about. And so I, just on a whim one day, I said, I'll start a Facebook group. And I thought maybe 20 people would join. And if 20 people joined, we talk about it and help each other. And it just grew and grew and grew. And it grew to eventually over 30,000. And I partnered with this soccer recruiting company, which was a mistake, and didn't like the direction it was going. So I just started my own group, which is the Soccer Parent Lifestyle. And today we have over 27,000 soccer parents in the group, but it's very active. We help each other a lot, and I couldn't be more pleased with it.
That's awesome. So I am kind of where you're at. My son is 9 and my daughter's 5. So my poor son has gone through the ringer with me as a father and as a parent. And I started off coaching him indoor, and ended up, I coached my daughter indoor. She was younger. He started with I-9 here in Texas and played soccer, and he wanted to play in the winter, and like, we're not sitting outside. So we put him on an indoor team. He played on an indoor team. They recruited him to come play, and he started to go from rec to club. And when he went from rec to club, I co-coached the team. And if kids don't listen to their parents when they're the coach, I don't know what it is. And thankfully the other coach, like, his son did the same thing. So like, we would coach each other's kids because our kids would listen to us, and it worked really well. And then there was parent drama, as always. And we left that team, and we started to find a new team, and I'm always doing research. When I was coaching, I mean, this was during COVID. So if work was slow, I would research soccer. If I would be reading soccer when I'd be going to bed, I would eat, live, and breathe soccer. When I was coaching, I started to write. I think I actually sent you one of my things I wrote, and I was called Coach's Obsession. And it was my goal, like, if I was going to continue coaching, I was going to try to put something out every month about things I'm learning as I'm coaching. And It didn't last long. That didn't last long at all. And but through this process of talking to parents and coaches, now doing my podcast, even though it's only 8 months in, 9 months in, I've been talking to coaches for a good 2 years. I mean, some of my people I talk to on a weekly basis, majority of them are coaches. It's like, I have a coach I go to, I need advice on X, Y, and Z. How would you expect a parent to approach you? And just having those open dialogues and having those conversations really has taught me. Like you said, it's like, it's like your Facebook page, and this is where I'm going with this. It's people have very good questions to ask. And the problem is that people are so new. And then you have the people that are 15 years in that are so jaded. It's like, this is a ridiculous question. They forget how humbling it is to come into those situations and trying to find your answer. And it's nice having your Facebook page. And as a parent going through that process, what was the first thing you learned not to do versus what you're doing right? Because I feel like that's the first thing I realized I did. Mine was harping on my son all the way home. I've gotten way better. And last night I went back to an old way, but it's because I expect more out of him now because he is playing select and his private coaching has changed. And I expect more out of him because I know what his private coaching is being, what he does at private coaching and what they're doing in practice.
Yes. I would say the first thing that I really learned was my in-game behavior. I learned just to basically shut up during the game and watch. That was the first thing I learned. One thing I learned was after the game, I made a rule to myself never to speak to my son about the game until he spoke first. You know, that when if he spoke first, that told me he was ready and willing to talk about the game, and then I could express my opinion at that time. But if I started when he first started out, as soon as he got in the car, I'd be like going over the game with him, and he's young, he's thinking about going to a birthday party, you know. So, you know, when you say kids don't listen to their parents, a lot of times that's the reason why. I mean, you know, I learned it. My kid was to talk to my kid about soccer when he was ready to talk about soccer. And then we could talk about anything. But those were the two major things that I learned, was to be quiet during the games. And when I say be quiet, I don't mean silent. I just mean, just say, if you're going to say something, just encourage the kids, encourage all the kids, not just your kid. And especially younger ages, you know, encourage the kids on the other team. If a kid makes a, you know, just shows outstanding effort, you know, say, you know, good job. The keeper on the other team makes a great save. Good job, keep. But as far as giving my son any kind of instructions, that's a big no-no. And, you know, that's the biggest thing I learned, was just to be quiet on the sidelines. And if I said anything, just yell out encouragement.
I think that's the hard thing, because I think more in our culture, it's becoming more and more common to have an opinion about everything and not being scared of the consequences. And where, go back 20 years ago, if you opened your mouth long enough, they're going to ask you to leave. I mean, I'm just going to go back when my brother graduated high school. My dad had to sign a contract to go watch high school sports. And I mean, my dad, I talked about this when I talked to on another episode. It was, my dad had to sign a contract because he would yell. My dad's voice carried. No one was off. Players were off limits, but the coach, the refs, the other coach, parents in the stands, no one was off limits, but the players. My dad would never yell at a player, but he had no problem yelling at the adults in the room. And so when my youngest in my family was starting to play sports, they made him sign a contract that he would be quiet. And that was my first experience. My memories is my dad at sporting events. It doesn't matter if it was high school football, and high school football in the Northeast is not like here in Texas and other parts of the country where they have their own coliseums built to go play football.
Yes.
His voice carried. And but like after the games, I would see my dad talking to the officials, because he might have gone to high school with one of them or knew their parents or whatever the case may be. And they would have laughs, but some officials were intimidated by my dad. And my dad was a teddy bear at the end of the day. I mean, if you ask anyone, big bark, but bigger hugs and a softie once you got to know him. And But having that as as my example, and I feel like I'm entitled, I'll use it to yell at the ref, because I feel like we are paying as parents, we're paying part of that fee for them to be there. But I was listening to, I'm editing right now an episode, and the coach said that, do you go into the teacher's classroom and yell at your teachers telling them they aren't teaching your kids right? Are they going to develop your kid? And I'm like, I'm sitting here listening to this. I've probably listened to that line probably a dozen times now, because I've only made it. I've had to start over editing. And I feel like sometimes when that happens, it's a message that I need to hear over and over and over until it sinks in. And it really made me think as a parent, like when we go to the fields, the pitch, and we start yelling, or the basketball court, whatever it may be, we are the example we set. And as a parent, like you talked about, when they are ready, not talking about the game. I always, when we get in the car, we always ask, like, how do you think you did? And ask questions. Now, did you learn to not talk, how do I describe it? Not so much talk about what he did right or wrong, but more ask questions of how he felt in the game? Or did you just give compliments in the car when you guys started to talk about it?
No, if I waited until he was ready to talk about it, we talked about everything. You know, what he did well, what I thought he could have done better. It's just a mix. It was open conversation. I'd ask him how he thought he did. And, you know, one thing about my son is he was always way more critical of himself than I would ever be. He suffers some from perfectionism, which is unfortunately an inherited trait. But, you know, and especially after a loss, you know, my kid hates to lose. I mean, he hates to lose way more than he loves winning. So, you know, after a loss, I knew not to say anything to him until he said something. And the one time he really tested me was we went to Atlanta and played. And the Sunday morning game, they lost. I think they lost that game 3-2. It was probably the best youth soccer game that he played in overall. I guess he was maybe 15, 16 at this point, but he was, you know, I could tell he was upset. And it was just he and I from Atlanta to Raleigh. We live right outside of Raleigh, North Carolina. So it was a 7-hour trip, and he did not say a word. And I didn't either. So we just had a silent road trip, you know, except for the music in the car. And I don't think we talked about that game for 2 days after the game. But once we do start talking, we talk about everything. You know, he takes my, well, I don't know if he values my opinion, but he accepts my opinion. And like I said, as far as criticism, he's much more critical of himself than I could ever be of him. So that's never really been a problem.
Now, what age did you start this at? I forgot to ask that earlier, like not having until he brings it up, because my kid's 9 and I try very hard. But my first question is like, how do you feel?
Well, I should have done it as soon as he started playing. I started about 11 or 12 when I knew that was what I should do. You know, like I say, it's a journey for soccer parents as well. You know, we talk about developing our kids. You know, one of our themes at the Soccer Parent Lifestyle is that, you know, soccer parents develop too over time. You know, especially those of us who were like me, who never had any exposure to the game when our kids start playing. I started not talking to him at about 11 or 12, but that was after I learned not to talk to him. It wasn't a conscious decision I made. If I had it to do again, I would have started that from the very beginning. I know when he was young, when he was 7 or 8, you know, as parents, we have to guard against wanting things more than our kids do. And, you know, my son is 10 years younger than my daughter. And so, you know, while my daughter was coming up, all we did was go to dance recitals, which I really hated. So I was so excited to be able to have a son to participate in soccer. And, you know, I would get so mad at him. I remember, I guess my son was like six, and he had a soccer game and a birthday party at the same time. And my wife asked him, you know, which one did he want to go to? And he said the birthday party. Well, I just lost it. You know, I was like, no, you're a soccer player now, but, you know, he's six. He's not, you know, he's not going to be playing the World Cup. But I mean, it, you know, it just got me so mad. And I had to look back and think, why am I getting so upset? And so one thing we have to do as parents is kind of back off from our emotions. And one of the things we have to do as a parent is to you know, have some perspective and realize that, you know, it's not the World Cup at 6, 7, 8 years old. And, you know, we have to let them be kids. You know, when my son first started, I took soccer, I believe, way more serious than he did. And so, you know, if I had to do over again, I would have been a little less rambunctious at the beginning at the beginning of his career.
The one thing I have realized is with my son, we can talk soccer all day long. I have learned not to really talk about how he's doing, but ask him questions versus, like, how did you think you handled this situation versus, and well, even in practice, it's, we'll talk about practice. Like, what did you like about practice tonight? And like, did you think you did good in this area or that area? Because we'll sit there and watch it. And he's very engaged. And then there'll be moments like, can I just listen to the radio? And it's like, that's fine, bud. We'll turn on the radio and we'll have a nice quiet ride home, whatever you want. And I'll always ask, like, have fun. That's the most important question, I think. Did you have fun today? And you talk about parents' dedication. Our rule with both of our kids, it's you sign a commitment, your commitment's to your team. And once, if there's no commitment to your team, you can go do whatever you want. We don't care. But you made a commitment for 6 months. Your commitment is after that 6 months, because that's what we sign up for, or however long it is, you're done. If you don't want to do it again, you don't have to. It's, he has a private coach, and I haven't asked him. I was meant to ask him this morning if he wanted me to schedule his private coach for the weekend, and I forgot, but he has a say in that. It's like, no, I don't want to. It's fine. It's like, we will schedule it for another day then. But he has a say in all of his activities. I think this is something my wife did a really good job introducing, is letting them have extra say in all the extra stuff. I think it really helped with my daughter, not just saying like, you're going to go do this. Like, do you want to go do this extra gymnastics this weekend? And of course her face lights up. I can do extra. And she's five. And my son, who is very much a soccer kid, he is 5, 7 days a week soccer. But the only thing that really is not his choice of not going to is training and games. Everything else is his choice. But he's like, if he has to miss, he's given up birthday parties. Like, we tell him, like, you can go to the birthday party, it's okay. And he goes, nope, I'm not going to the birthday party. I want to go play soccer. He is, but that, I think that's the difference. Like, we don't put the pressure on him. And it's like, he gets done and they lose 10-0. And he's like, when are we playing the next game? It's not so much about the winning and losing. It's, are you having fun? And I think that's something that was really hard for me as a parent that went from watching to coaching, now back to watching. It's, how do you guide yourself? I mean, I know that I can be pretty hard on them and I can be pretty hard on the refs in a game. But by the end of last season, my wife was really good at it, was cheering on the other goalies. Whatever goalie was at our end, we were cheering for them. And it didn't matter if they blocked our son's shot. We were cheering for the goalie. And I think that's what's missing in, at least here in Texas, because I don't know if you watch any of the other Facebook pages around here, there's always a fight. And I think that if you just learn to cheer for all the kids on the pitch and let bygones be bygones, let them do what they need to do. Because at the end of the day, my son doesn't hear me cheering him on unless I yell something very specific to him. And we have keywords I use with him and he knows what they mean. And it deals nothing with position, or it's his attitude. And I listened to Matt Montaigne's episode, and I have a quote. I repeat to my son, your emotions affect your attitude. Your attitude affects your results. And I go, that's to everything, Landon. I go, that is school. That is soccer. That's friendship. that is everything. And he has to learn to control his emotions. And it's like when we tell him, my wife and I both tell him a lot, it's you get mad or hurt on the field, don't take it out on the player, take it out on the ground and the ball. Show them that you're the better player. Show them. And the other day, like last day, I was talking to him on the way to practice. I go, when you make mistakes, practice is designed for mistakes. When you get to go to games, make mistakes. Forget it and move on. Because if you let it fester inside of you, because that's my trait as a parent, it's like it'll eat me alive when I make a mistake and I won't get over it and I'll just shut down. I go, you have to learn to move on. You can think about it later, after the game, after practice, we can talk about it. But in that moment, just play in the moment. If you let the past haunt you, you'll never move forward in the moment. And have you reached that? When did you reach that point? Because I don't think I would be here if I didn't talk to all the people I talked to. I mean, this was the big thing for me in the last 6 months.
Yes. Well, like I say, around when my son was 11, 12, right before they started full field, you know, at that point, it was obvious my son was getting pretty good. He was a tall kid. He was always the fastest on his team. He was getting pretty skilled, and the that was slowing him down was, like you say, hanging on to a mistake. And like when he was getting ready to shoot, he wouldn't take a shot unless it was, you know, he thought it was the perfect opportunity to score. And I tell him, just let it rip. And I'd show, you know, I had him watch a lot of professional soccer. And, you know, we'd be sitting watching, and, you know, Messi would shoot and miss, or Ronaldo would shoot and miss. Or, you know, I say, look, these are the best in the world, and they maybe hit 30, 40% of their shots. So there is no perfect shot. Just take the shot and let it rip. And I said, the best in the world mess up, make mistakes. And, you know, when we'd be sitting, we watch a lot of Premier League games. You know, especially if he had an afternoon game, we get up in the morning and we watch, you know, three Premier League games. And every time somebody made a mistake, I'd be sure to point it out. I said, look, you know, this guy's getting paid millions of dollars and he makes mistakes. So don't worry about a mistake. Just go out and have fun. I said, you're going to make mistakes. I said, but you got to make mistakes to get to the successes. So just think about, you know, if you're going to shoot and you're going to get, you know, average 25% of shots in, you got to take those three shots that aren't perfect to get to that perfect. So, you know, go out and do it. And
there was going back to the whole thing of being perfect. You know, the Michael Jordan quote, right? He had like what, missed 9,000 shots, has lost, given the ball, what was it, 300 times to give him the ball to make the final shot, has lost whatever it is. And my son found it the other day at a restaurant and we were talking about it. And it's like, see, he is considered the best basketball player of a lifetime. And here he's talking about all of his failures led to his success. Like you said, you have to fail in order to learn. And it's hard. With that being said, keep on hitting buttons. I have a list of questions. You talked about managing the expectations of your kids and learning when. So as he's grown, because I know he played all the way up to his senior year, if I'm not mistaken, your son.
Yes.
When was the moment you realized that you had no control anymore of his soccer future? Because I feel like all of us parents dream of our kids being the next Landon Donovan or Christian Pulisic, especially here in the States. And real like goal expectations, it's like we have a local soccer team, it's like my son admires FC Dallas player here, Bernard Camungo. And if you ever heard of his story, I'd advise you to go look it up sometime. And but it's someone he's watched play for almost 2 years now, a year and a half, and it's been fun watching him have that dream, because that was, it's from for as long as I can remember, he's been saying he's going to be a pro soccer player and nothing else. Like, nope, I don't need to learn to read. I don't need to learn to do this. I don't need to go to school. I'm going to be a pro soccer player. But when was the day that you realized that Dante's dream had shifted from soccer to the next chapter in his life?
probably about ninth or 10th grade. Dante was a little different, and he's always been really good at soccer, but it was never do or die for him. You know, he never came to me and said, I want to be a pro soccer player. And, you know, that's what I got to do with my life. He's always been interested in other things. Like he's a really good writer. And he's my kid is sort of a nerd. He's a good writer. He's always been interested in theater. And I believe in college, he's going to end up majoring in film. He wants to direct and produce movies, and that's kind of been an interest of his all his life. So in that regards, my life has been easy. Now you mentioned, when was the day I knew I didn't have any control? I knew I didn't have any control over my kid when he was 5 or 6 years old. I mean, you know, just his personality. He's a lot like his mother, which I knew from the day I met her, I would never have any control in that situation. But the tough day was when the day we had the conversation that he told me he didn't want to play in college. We had started the recruiting process, and it was going pretty well. And he was just growing into his body around his sophomore year. You know, with growth spurts. You know, he got up to be about 6 foot tall and about 180, and you know, fast and getting strong and just you know, finally growing into his legs. And his sophomore year in high school was probably his best year of soccer. You know, he had a stretch for about 6 months where he was just dominant on the pitch. And we went to a couple of D1 ID camps, and he did very well at all those. And so, you know, I was kind of, I mean, my hope was that, you know, I'd take him to these camps and he kind of catch the bug and really want to do it. And you know, he came to me and said, well, you know, I don't want to play in college. And it was tough for me to hear that, but in a way for me to hear that, because I kind of, you know, I knew deep inside that's kind of how he felt. And, you know, he, of course, you know, kids never want to disappoint their parents. And, you know, I told him, I said, it's fine if you don't want to play in college. You know, I told him he'd be losing some advantages. You know, he, at the time, he was looking at trying to get into some elite colleges. And I told him that, you know, playing soccer would help. But, you know, he pretty much made up his mind. So I guess that's a long way of answering your question, that I never really had control over what he wanted to do. But I would say probably sophomore year of high school, when he was, I guess, 15, 16, that area where, you know, he kind of stepped up and took control and made it known that, you know, this is the direction that he wanted to go in soccer. And that was just to play through high school and then go to college and play on the club team or play in the adult league like he's doing now.
So it's just a pathway for him through his adolescence and childhood that fed a part of his life that he needed ultimately.
Yes. Well, during COVID, he really struggled during COVID, and you know, had some mental health issues. And you know, looking back, I've come to find out that soccer was his place of that was his peace. When he was on the soccer field, he could just be a kid and not worry about life, and that was where he just enjoyed playing. And Dante, like I say, he never said he wanted to be a pro, but it's not like he doesn't love soccer. He loves the game and loves playing the game, but it's not what he wants to do as a professional in life. But he found peace at the soccer field. That's where he could just let his mind relax and just enjoy playing soccer. And taught me a lot about being a parent too, as to, you know, just because your kid is good at something doesn't mean that they have the desire to be great at. You know, I'm still convinced to this day, and I've even had coaches tell me that Dante he has all the abilities to be an elite soccer player, still does, but he didn't have the desire to. And, you know, it took me a long time to figure out that that's okay. You know, as parents, we get caught up into, you know, our kid's good at something, and then we start thinking about, well, you know, if he's a good, you know, saxophonist, you know, maybe he can go and be the top there, or if your daughter's good at gymnastics, you know, she go to the Olympics. Well, just because the kids are good at something doesn't mean that they have that inner desire to be great. So, you know, as parents, we have to step back and let them lead. And, you know, my son may one day be a great filmmaker, you know, if that's what he has a desire to do, but he doesn't have the desire to be an elite soccer player. So, you know, I had to learn to step back and accept that.
I think we have a family friend here, and their son, phenomenal soccer player, I think he was 14, maybe he was 15 at the time, realized his passion wasn't, like, his true passion inside wasn't soccer, it was cooking. And so he gave up playing club level soccer, went to his parents, was scared to death how they were going to react, because they've invested all this money sending him to camps and all this other stuff. And he told him, like, I want to focus more on cooking than soccer. I'll still play. And he coached his sister's team. I don't know if he still does, but for a while he coached his sister's team, still staying active in the game. But his passion was cooking. And he goes, I don't want to take up a spot on a roster where a kid will be start being looked at for colleges. It's not fair for them, especially because I'm not going to go to college for soccer. I'm going to go to culinary school, and I can't do both. And he knew this at a young age. Mm-hmm. And his parents' reaction was awesome. It's like, we got a pay raise. We love it. And he's like, can I still do my CrossFit? And they said, yes. And I always think of that as the example of the day that my kids tell me they no longer want to do whatever activity it is. It's because I enjoy going to their practices and their training sessions and whatever it may be, because they're doing something they want. All but my daughter swim. Like, she would quit swim in a heartbeat if we would let her, but she needs to learn how to swim. It's swim lessons, not swim club. And that's the thing. It's like, we go there and we watch her swim and we get enjoyment out of it. We give thumbs ups or thumbs sideways if she's not behaving. And there is all types of things that we enjoy doing and watching our kids. Even at my daughter's gymnastics, the view is partially blocked, but it's still fun going and supporting her and watching her grow as this little 5-year-old child that she is into whatever she chooses. And I think as parents, and it sounds like you learned this with your son earlier than a lot of parents, I feel, is just to back off and let go and let them be themselves. I think that's the hardest thing, is like you said, like, we have this image of where we want our kids, and the image may not be their end goal, and it might change, or we put too much pressure on. And that's my biggest fear with my son, and maybe you have some advice on it, is burning out your child. Like I said, like, we make everything an option for him above and beyond his normal commitment. And because our fear is burnout. It's like, tonight there's no soccer for him. And it's like, him and I might go play, we call it left foot, where we can only score with our left foot in the hallway, but that's it. I mean, right now I'm riding him because he made a bet with me and he lost it because he has to do a keep ups. He owes me 100 keep ups in a row. I mean, he's only 9, but I gave him 2 weeks to do it. And what he doesn't know is that I just want him to practice them every day. I don't care if he hits the 100, and we've negotiated down to 50, but I was told if he can do 25 at 9 years old, he's doing pretty well. And then I show him the video of Messi doing 100 in a row. I'm like, there, Messi did it. And he knows that I'm only messing around with him. But I talked about, like, I think it's Pele that did a 10,000 or 1,000 keep ups, and has it all on video, and kids mimic the video as they get older. I'm like, I go, these are our exceptions, but bud, if you put your mind to anything, you can accomplish it. I mean, one of my favorite stories is with Landon, is he learned how to do a rainbow in a week, but spent 10 hours that week learning how to do a rainbow so he could go do it in a game because someone challenged him to do it. And as the coach, I allowed that creativity to happen on the field at the right moment. But that's the thing. It's like, how do you not stifle their creativity and growth by hounding them too much? What would you say that you learned? You said you learned a lot of this at 11 years old, but I think a lot of it was already there before then. You just implemented it. But how did you make that decision to say, today's the day I am going to change this behavior. I know I'm harping on this a lot, and it's just because it's what I'm seeing more and more. I know a kid that has no say, and he plays soccer 7 days a week, and I'm just waiting for the day that he turns around and says, I'm done.
Well, I see that a lot, that parents are just really, really pushing their kids. And I guess the biggest thing is my parenting philosophy as a whole is all I've ever asked my kids to do was to compete and do the best that they can in whatever they want to do. We've always let them decide what activities they want to do. But, you know, my only rule, the only time I ever got on my son anything in soccer in his 15 years was if I felt he wasn't giving maximum effort. I never got on him for, a shot that he missed or a pass he missed or anything. And it's only maybe been twice in 15 years. Well, it's once that we really had a big blow up when my son was 8 or 9. He was a hothead on the field. I mean, he was a hothead, and something went wrong during the game, and I looked, and my son, the coach took my son out, and at that age, he never came out of the game, and he reacted badly to it. He was mad because he was subbed. I think may have been the first time all season he was subbed. It was like the fifth or sixth game, and he went over there and was packing his bag, and I was like, what is he doing? And he put his backpack on, this is during the middle of the game, while the game was going on, and started walking around the field. So I got up and I met him in the end zone, and I said, what are you doing, son? And he says, well, you know, coach took me out, and he was mad at me because it did. I said, well, it doesn't matter. I said, first of all, he's the coach. You aren't entitled to play the whole game. And I said, if you want to go home, I'll take you home. But if we leave this field now, you will never you will never step on a soccer field again. I said, one thing we don't do is we don't quit in the middle of the game. And I said, so you decide, we can either go home now, or you can go back over and apologize to your coach and your teammates, and maybe he'll let you back in the game. So you got two choices. That's really the only time that I've ever gotten on my son during his soccer thing. But going back to my parenting philosophy is, like I say, is just for them to compete. I say, whether you're in the classroom, you need to compete, and not necessarily compete against others, but compete against yourself. You know, try to get a little better each day and give maximum effort at whatever you want to do. So, you know, outside the classroom, whatever activity you want to do, you can do. But, you know, a lot of parents talk about, well, how much they've invested. I don't really care about investing the money as long as he's going to give effort. And I said, you know, son, if you go out and lose every game, if you're terrible, that doesn't matter to me. All that matters to me is you're trying to do the best you can. So I never really pushed him in soccer, and I never really had to. You know, when he was home, if he had an off day, he was out in the backyard doing something with the ball. He, you know, he always had a ball at his feet. So I never really had to push him. We never did private coaching. We did group coaching when he needed some help with some technique stuff. But mostly he was always out in the backyard playing.
I think that's one thing that's missing in our society is, like you talked about, that internal drive earlier. It is, they have to want it. They have to be willing to go pick up the ball. And I mean, I live in Texas right now. It's 100 plus degrees out. I'm not letting my kid go out back and kick the soccer ball, but he'll sit there in the hallway or in the living room and kick the ball against the ottoman in the living room, or he will go juggle the ball around the house. Like, it's becoming more and more common for him to pick the ball back up. I wrote down the wrong question. Wrong train of thought where we left off. As you've learned to go through this process with your son, and we see it especially on social media with parents talking, especially on your Facebook group, how would you advise parents with the whole process? We've been talking a lot about parenting styles and backing off, but when we start applying that pressure and having kids that have the symptoms of perfectionism or letting down. My son coach told us a very interesting thing when we first told my wife, not even me, I wasn't there, was that kids under the age of about U13, only thing they care about is pleasing the authority figure in hand. And if the authority figure is negatively talking to them and talking them down, they're going to shut down and be candidly saying they won't be productive. They'll be useless on the pitch. They won't be able to do the things they need to do. Now, with your years of experience and running the social media group and people reaching out and talking, what advice would you give parents to start looking for mannerisms or advice you'd give to help them not to break, so air quote, break their child mentally? Because we can be too hard on our kids and we don't even realize it because we digest emotions differently than they do.
Yes, well, the first thing I would say is, as parents, we have to let a lot of things go as to how we were raised. It was just a different time. And, you know, I find myself a lot of times in the conflict of, well, you know, back in my day, you know, my parents did this, and we get into, well, you know, kids are soft these days, and you know, so on and so forth. Well, it's just a different, you know, the kids today are faced with things that we never even had to think about. You know, I look, you know, growing up when I was 8, 9, and 10, it was a different time. First of all, you knew everybody's name on the street. Your parents knew all the adults. The adult down the street could tell you something, and you had to obey the adult the same as you did your parents. And if you didn't, they would come and tell your parents and you'd be in trouble. But it was a time when your parents could just say, you know, go outside and don't come back in the house until I call you. I mean, that's how I grew up. So, you know, we'd get on our bikes and go off. And, you know, these days you really can't do that. You know, you a lot of times you don't even know who your next door neighbor is. I mean, you know, you may know them and wave to them, but you don't really know anything about them. And it's just a lot more dangerous world these days than it was when we grew up. So our kids have a lot more things to think about. I mean, you know, we never had shooter drills when I was growing up. I mean, that wasn't ever a thought. You know, never entered my mind that somebody would come into school with a gun and shoot anybody. So our kids are dealing with a lot of things that we had to deal with. So as parents, we need to be cognizant of that. And as far as recognizing signs, you know, if your kids become withdrawn, and sometimes it's hard, you know, I you know, talk about a lot in my Facebook group, but, you know, my own son has dealt with a lot of anxiety and depression. And, you know, he's an introverted kid to begin with. So, you know, he keeps a lot of things to himself. But, you know, if you notice things like, you know, they aren't as in soccer, or if they have other passions, if they stop doing that, you really need to watch what they're looking at online. You know, you can't stop it. I mean, kids, if kids want to see something online, they're going to see it, but you need to monitor it as best you can, or at least be aware of any changes that they're doing online. Just change of attitude. And it can be difficult because, you know, teenagers are teenagers. You know, they don't want anything to do with you under the best of circumstances. But you just have to be aware and notice, you know, notice differences in behavior. And it's really, really hard to detect. I don't have any concrete answers to say, well, you have to look for this, that, and that. The only thing I can say is just try to be as involved in your kid's life as possible, so that generally things come about because you have a gut feeling that something's wrong. It's not something concrete that you're going to see, but if you have a really strong relationship with your child, it'll be a gut feeling that something's off. So I know that's probably not the answer that parents want to hear, but
I get what you're saying. As an adult, I've been more and more open about my depression. I actually suffer. I've had bouts with it my whole life since seventh grade. So you're talking eighth grade, 2007 is that my first memory of having inappropriate thoughts, we'll leave it there. And that was, I look at my kids and I'm petrified. They'll go through what I went through. And I mean, we as parents, we're protective of our kids and we're protective of other kids. So it's like, I get a lot of flack because I am very, I want the kids that my kids around to be upstanding citizens and upstanding people and respectful and polite. And if they're playing soccer with my kid, I want them to be the best soccer player because I want whatever team my son is on to be. Then when it comes back to Landon and how his emotions are, I'm very, very grateful for my wife because I tend to be like, is this a sign? And she goes, no, he's just being a kid. It's just anxiety. And I think having that conversation with our spouses, significant other, whoever it may be, other parents, maybe if you're comfortable with it, and having that open dialogue to maybe they see something that you don't see, and the parent might be too scared to say something, or they have said something, and is it your place to say something to the parent? And I don't, as a parent, this is a learning curve for me, and my parents had to deal with my struggles as a adolescent. So it's very hard. I hid it from my parents for four years. They never knew. And it wasn't until my mom finally found out that I had two smiles. I had my depressed smile and I had my happy smile. And majority of the time she saw my depressed smile. So she never knew what my real smile was. And as a parent, sports is an outlet and we don't want to ruin it for them. We don't want to put too much pressure they have to perform. And I feel like sometimes it's self-imposed and sometimes it's parent-imposed, but how we go about doing it changes our outcome. It goes, the quote I gave you earlier, our emotions affect our attitude affects our results. And I try to repeat that to my son as much as possible. And I think it deals mostly because I think the psychological side of the game of life. And if we let our emotions dictate our attitudes, our results and whatever we're going to do will be either really great or really poor. And it's okay to have emotions. It's okay to have feelings. It's okay to, and how do you, and this is more of a parenting thing, I think, seeing it in the sport, how did you see the difference in conversations you've had with parents or seeing players on the field play differently? That, because a lot of times you'll be on a team, you'll have the same team for 4 or 5 years and you'll see a player go through a slump. Do you ever see the body language change? I mean, we talk about pro body language, professional athletes' body language change all the time. And how they may be going through something. I mean, here in FC Dallas.
I can see that. I can see the change in body language with my son. And especially when he was struggling, the effort wasn't always there. And at first, before I recognized it, you know, that's when I'd say something to him about the effort. And at first it was really subtle, but you know, I mentioned that period that he went through when he was just dominant. That like 6 months period was when he was in the groove and he, I guess everything, you know, everything was aligned in life and he was going great until COVID hit, and that's when it went. But when he was depressed, I could see it. I could see it on the field, and that's the only time that I, you know, have to say, you know, son, you need to go to practice. And then I knew something was wrong. If I had to push him to go to practice, I knew something was wrong, because when everything was right, he was sitting in the car waiting for me to go to practice. You know, when your kids want to be great at something, you don't have to push them. So, you know, that's how I could tell with Dante, if if we were getting ready to go to practice, generally he'd be in the car waiting on me or say, you know, Dad, come on, we need to go. So he was engaged. When he was depressed, I didn't necessarily have to push him to go to practice, but he may be sitting on the couch in the living room and, you know, waiting on me saying, well, you know, son, let's go. And, you know, he mosey on. But, you know, that's how I could tell. But his body language in practice, maybe he'd be going 80%, not 100%, you know. And from the outside, I don't know if anybody could tell. I don't know if his coach could tell. But, I mean, I could tell just knowing him. Because when he was fully engaged on the field, even in practice, he was a difference maker.
Right.
And when he wasn't fully engaged, he was just out there going through the motions.
So this leads into the lovely conversation of mental toughness. I mean, how did you work with him, or how have you seen, not just with your own son, but advice that you've been given or advice that you've seen within the social media side? And I haven't read your book, I'll be honest. I'm not big on print. I'm big on audio. And it is, how did you figure out how to help build mental toughness? Because I feel like that is I feel like this beautiful game that we let our kids learn and love and foster doesn't just teach a life skill for soccer. It teaches the life skills off the pitch. Mm-hmm. I was watching Walter Payton's son in some interview recently, and he talked about what soccer taught him. It taught him to be a better soccer player. I mean, better football player. Everything he learned to do in soccer when he was cut or didn't make the varsity team and switched to football and already was getting college scholarships, his foot skills was all because of soccer. His mental attitude, all because of soccer. And that's what he talked about briefly in his interview. So how do you recommend or give encouragement to build that mental toughness for those low points? Because I feel like every player goes through a low. As parents, we go through lows because our kids aren't performing. They are not doing what they want to do. And how would you advise parents to help their players and advise the parents?
Okay. One of the biggest things we can do in that regards, and it's kind of counterintuitive, but is to let them fail. Let them go through some adversity sometimes. And I'll give you a good example. In the group, of course, we always want our kids playing in the optimal soccer environment for them. And as a parent, at some point, they're not going to be in the optimal soccer environment. I mean, it just happens that. But my son, his first year of travel ball, he was on the team, and we had switched clubs, and I won't get into why we switched, but we had switched clubs, and so he didn't get to go through tryouts, so he got put on the bottom team, which I was fine with. Because we were coming over late, just right before the start of the season. And that first season, they went 1-11. And the one game they won was because of a forfeit. But I believe at the time, they were playing 9v9, and they had 10 kids on the team. So, you know, we at most, we ever had one sub. And most games, we had no subs. And some games, we played a man down. But that one season was probably the best thing that ever happened to my son. He learned to play under adversity. He learned to you know, after, you know, third or fourth game, the fifth game, there's no expectations really of winning. And he learned to go to practice with a positive attitude and work to get better. And in the game, you know, he knew he wasn't coming out of the game, so he had to be in shape. He learned to play hard till the final whistle. And, you know, it wasn't the optimal environment for him. But that one season, that fall season, he was so much more mentally tough after the season than he was beginning. And the spring season, same team, same coach, same 10 kids, they end up going like 5-5 or 5-6. So, I mean, it, you know, wasn't a great season, but I mean, they, you know, saw a lot of improvement, but that year, he just developed mental toughness, and it's because he got to go through a extended period of adversity. And, you know, we always say, you know, if it doesn't kill you, it only makes you stronger. So, you know, he learned that lesson. It didn't kill him, and it made him stronger. And the next year, you know, during the whole time they were going through this losing streak, I said, well, son, you know, sometimes in life, you know, we went to this club and we're not going to quit. I mean, you know, you just, you know, you had a bad hand dealt to you in life. Sometimes you're going to have bad hands dealt to you. So you know, you focus on you doing the best you can, and also focus on helping your teammates do the best they can. And it was a really good lesson. And the following year, he got promoted to the top team in his age group. So he went from being on, I think they had seven teams in each age group. So he went from team seven to team one. And at the tryouts, the coach mentioned to me, he said, you know, said one thing about your kid is like, he's mentally tough. He said, I watched him last year and he played hard regardless of what the score was. And you know, I didn't place him in that environment on purpose, but looking back, that was probably the best thing that could have happened to him at that time. And I mean, you know, during the season, it sucked. I mean, you know, knowing they, you know, had a 99% chance of losing, and it wasn't, they were terrible. I mean, they lose, you know, 4-3. It was always something that would cause them to lose, but they fought every game. And I said, son, that's all we can do in life. So, you know, as parents, a lot of times we like to remove the struggle. As soon as we see our kids struggling, we think, what can we do? What's the thing that we can do to get them out of the situation? Well, sometimes it's good to let them struggle and let them work themselves out. Like I say, the spring season, that same team with no changes, you know, end up with a 500 record. So obviously they figured some things out for themselves. And that's what we have to do as parents to develop mental toughness, is to let the kids figure out how to solve problems for themselves. But they can't solve problems if they're never in an environment where problems occur. And, you know, you see a lot of parents talking about, you know, well, I want my kid to play on the top team at age 9, 10. And, you know, these teams that never lose, well, they're the ones that can't handle adversity when they do lose, when they right. do lose that one game. So, you know, after that, if my kid lost a game, I mean, like I said, he hates losing. So, and he hated that whole season. So, I mean, he hates losing, but he got a lot mentally stronger by being in that adverse situation. So the main thing I would do is to try to avoid the temptation of fixing everything for your kid. You know, let them figure out how to fix it themselves.
I laugh because on the soccer field, I'm pretty good with that. But everything at the house, I stink at. I don't like. I think it's because it's the opposite of what my childhood was. My parents let me fail quite a bit, or I couldn't do X, Y, and Z until I had something this done. And like mowing the yard, we had 2 acres, and I wasn't allowed to go play with my friends until we had a push mower that wasn't self-propelled, and we had the house sat on top of a little hill. So literally, I was mowing the yard up a hill all the time. But it's like, I, as a parent, I understand what you're saying, exactly. Like, you have to let them fail. And I think having that, the chance to fail, the chance not to be successful, is so key to life, because it's how everything else happens. I mean, it work, my job, I explained to my son, it's like, if our plan is executed perfectly, that means we're doing something about 99.9% accuracy. It's not perfect. And on a bad day, you're lucky it's 50%, depending on what is going on and what in the real world is. I think you hit right there, is letting them understand, like, you don't need to be on the best team. You don't need to be on the team that's always winning. You said that the teams that are always winning, they can't handle losing. And I don't know if it's the parents that can't handle losing or the kids, because I think sometimes the kids react to the parents the parents' emotions to losing more than the kids. That's one thing I love about my son is that he doesn't care if he wins or loses as long as he gets to play. And that was the big factor for us to see in him is that eventually that will change. We were told the point of winning.
Well,
But it,
I, you know, that's one good thing having a Facebook group full of parents tells me, you know, a lot of parents, you know, I see it is at the first sign of adversity, they'll advise somebody, well, you need to get away from that club and go to this club. You know, you need to, well, changing clubs is should be a last resort. You know, and I had a love hate relationship with my son's club. I mean, they, I mean, you know,
that's every parent. That's just about
yeah, yes. And you know, I kept 99% of the hate to myself, which is probably a good thing for my son. But you know, they'll advise them, well, you need to get away from that club. Well, you know, I feel like parents are too quick to not let their kid face adversity. And I mean, even over things like, you know, say, well, my kids are left back and the coach wants to put them at right wing. And my kid, and I'm like, well, he needs to learn, he or she needs to learn to play right wing, or, you know, the more positions they can play, the better. But even that is, you know, the thought that, you know, my kid is struggling. They come home and they're unhappy because they're put in a new position. Well, you know, don't go to the coach and talk to them. Talk to your kid about, you know, okay, this is the hand you're dealt. Do the best you can with the hand that you're dealt. And, you know, that's why a lot of our kids don't have mental toughness, because we, you know, at the first sign of adversity or unhappiness, we step in and try to change the situation.
I totally agree with that. I think you talk about changing positions. I think Colleen Acosta is a great example that plays for LAFC, and he bounced around. Like, he started as a left back, then he moved to the right wing or left wing, then moved to midfield, moved back to a wing position, played striker, played center back, and at the end of the day, he's the one that's in the pros. It's not the one that plays the pocket position they've always designated. I'm a striker. I always laugh when I see that. It's like, and they're nine. Like, no, no kid at 9 years old is a striker. I go, my son has a phenomenal left boot and a phenomenal right foot, and he plays left back, and he'll play anywhere but striker and goalie. Like, he'll admit, like, he's not a goalie because he'll let all the balls go through because he doesn't care. He just wants to play soccer. Striker, he's offsides too much. Like, he knows that's not his strong suit. He's better at passing and giving that great pass than making sure he's always onside. But he's nine and he gets this. But he goes, I'll play anything but those two. I think the goalie wants more because of us, because we know that he doesn't care if he loses. He just wants to play soccer. And that's the difference. And I think if we don't instill in our kids, and I think you're right, it's like we instill them like they have to do these things and that thing. And if it doesn't go that way, the parents yank them from the opportunity. My biggest, as a parent, and I think this is where my struggle is when there's a personality issue on a team. And how do you handle the mental side of that? It's like, I tell them, like, either you run right at them or you stay in the corner. You have two choices, and that's the hard side of this beautiful game. Well, is teaching them.
I always taught my son, you know, as far as personalities, it's the same thing. You know, they're going to have to deal with all types of personalities out in the world. I say, you know, son, when you get out in the world and you're working, you're going to have to work with all types of people. You're not going to get along with some. I say, you don't have to like your teammate. I said, but you have to work with your teammate, and you have to celebrate when your teammate does well, and you don't have to like them, but you got to pass them the ball if they're open.
That is the thing we have talked about with my son.
If they mess up and let a defender get by them, you have to go and try to help your teammate out. I said, you don't have to like them at all. I said, I don't care if you like them or hate them or whatever, but you have to support them as a teammate and realize that you are working for the same goals. So, you know, it's good. It's good for them to work through some conflicts personality wise with that, you know, as far as teammates as well.
I totally agree. And I think that's part of the mental toughness. As parents, we have to create our players to have a chance to have that conflict. I mean, we have gone through things on teams and attitude and behavior in the past with players, and we know what we will put up with and what we won't now, and we'll take it to the coach. It's just a matter of how long we'll let our son flounder, so to speak, in that. And because at the same time, like you said, you have to build that chance of having those moments of frustration and teaching them it's okay to have these emotions. It's how you work it out. Just like the other night in practice, my son was shoved headfirst to the ground and he turned around and chased a kid 50-50, pushed him off the ball going 50-50. Then at the end of it, he full arm extended him to the ground. And I was proud of my son for standing up for himself. But the full arm extension, he probably could have not done. But if you, as I told, it's like, and my son got in trouble, and it's like, and the coach, I don't think, cared, because the way he said it, it's like, Landon, stop shoving, just like that. It's like, I don't think he wants them to be physical. He wants them to understand that it's a physical game. And building that diversity, building that up is very, very important. Anything you would like to promote or offer up to let parents know where they can find information on things that you've worked on or places they can find literature that might be helpful for themselves?
Okay. Well, you can always find us at thesoccerparentlifestyle.com on our website. Like I say, our main product, Soccer Parent Lifestyle Magazine, it's a digital magazine that's really devoted to development, both of soccer players and soccer parents. And our motto is developing better soccer players by becoming better soccer parents. So, you know, our philosophy is if you can become a more educated soccer parent, the more educated you can become as a soccer parent, the better you can help your child develop. Because really, parents are the engine that drives youth soccer. And we all complain about policies and development by clubs and everything, but everything starts with the parents because, you know, first of all, we finance the whole operation and we create the product. So without parents, you wouldn't have a product and you wouldn't have any way to operate the product. So, it all starts with soccer parents. So the better we can be as soccer parents, the better the youth soccer game will be.
I like that. Yes, that's the conversation. The free market society for soccer is the challenge. Now, I always ask this to almost all my guests, who has been your greatest influence and your greatest example maybe for you to be where you're at today as a soccer parent?
Excellent question. I would say that a lady by the name of Sky Eddy, I don't know if you know her, but she runs soccerparenting.com, and she was a all-American goalie in college, but she was the one who really opened my eyes into the better angels of being a soccer parent. You know, like I said, when I started out, I was a pretty rambunctious soccer dad. I wasn't impolite or anything, but I was, you know, loud and boisterous and you know, yelling instructions to my son. But Sky Eddy was probably my biggest influence in soccer. She taught me that there was another side to being a better soccer parent.
Yes, that's a great example. I know who you're talking. Once you said the website, I know exactly who it was.
Hello, guys. I hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode. There was a lot of information, a lot of fun chat about being parents and soccer players and the struggles that he has learned from and trying to help others through the process. Now, that being said, I hope you guys go check out his book and his Facebook page, and maybe we can all learn some wonderful information from Buford and the experience he has had. I know it's not the same as here in North Texas, but it's an experience nonetheless. And parents carry a lot of information that we don't always share. And I hope you guys take what he has to say and truly try to apply it to our players and try to make our players stronger and better for their next challenges. Doesn't mean they always will be soccer players, but they will follow their passion and follow their love. And all we can do is be there to support them. Until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.